What do you think equipped you to be ready to engage within relation?
So the question to me is not whether I'm ready or not, but whether I do it or not. And when you decide to do it, of course, then there's homework to do.
Welcome to Stories in Relation, a companion podcast to the In Relation Project. If you've ever wondered, is it my place as a non-expert to teach about Indigenous topics? Keep listening. The In Relation Project supports new learners to Indigenous topics at UBC and instructors who are new to introducing Indigenous contexts and histories in their classrooms. My name is Janie Liu, and I'm one of your co-hosts. I'm the Senior Educational Consultant for Indigenous Initiatives at UBC's Center for Teaching, Learning, and Technology, or CTLT. CTLT Indigenous Initiatives develops and offers programming, resources, and consultations focused on Indigenous engagement in curriculum, pedagogy, classroom climate, and professional development. I am delighted to introduce my co-host, Samantha Nock. Hi, Sam.
Hi, my name is Sam. I'm an educational consultant on the Indigenous Initiatives team with Janie. I'm Cree Métis. I grew up in Northeast BC. Yeah, I'm excited to jump into this podcast. It's been a really fun experience producing it so far.
Well, today I'm excited to be introducing episode 2 of Stories in Relation. We'll be interviewing Dr. Ayaka Yoshimisu, who's a faculty member in the Department of Asian Studies at UBC. Hi, Ayaka.
Hi, Janie.
Thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me here. It's such an honor to participate in this, so thank you.
It's our absolute pleasure. I was actually looking through my notes preparing for our conversation, and I realized we met in the summer of 2019. You'd reached out to us to schedule a course consultation. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember that. Yeah, so that was really nice. I was preparing for my new course. I mean, the course itself wasn't new, but I was teaching the course for the first time.
What a total delight to come full circle and hear more about where that journey is taking us. Let's get into it. You're listening to Stories in Relation, Episode 2, In Relation with Dr. Ayaka Yoshimisu. In this episode, Dr. Yoshimisu will share about her experiences using and adapting In Relation resources in her course, Canadian Studies 250, Introduction to Canada. Thanks for joining us to share your story, Ayaka. As we're chatting in the introduction, the two of us met in 2019. I remember walking over to see you in the C.K. Choi building to ask you about your course. Back when meeting meant meeting in person. At that time, I was struck by what we had in common, both of us being Asian racialized settlers and thinking through our relationships to Indigenous sovereignty and decolonization in our teaching and research. Of course, I was also interested in how you were thinking through your own unique experiences. So let's back up a little and fill in our listeners. Could you begin by telling us a bit about yourself and elaborating on what brought you to In Relation?
Sure. So my name is Ayaka Yoshimisu. In my own language, we say our last name first and then first name. So my last name, so usually I say Yoshimisu Ayaka in my own language. My last name means beautiful water. My first name means to add colors. I gave up on my last name when I married. So my legal name now is the village of rice fields, Tamura. My original last name is my father's name. So Japan is a patriarchal society, so you inherit your father's name. And my father is from so-called Sapporo, Hokkaido, which is the stolen land of Ainu people. And Ainu are indigenous people in Japan, and they refer to this land, Ainu Mosir. So before colonization, they lived in the northern part of what is now called Japan and Sakhalin and even the south part of Kamchatka. And their territory is now split by Japan-Russia border. So my father is from a settler family, and his paternal ancestors come from Fukui Prefecture in the mainland Japan. But I was actually born in my mother's hometown called Fujinomiya, located at the bottom of the Mount Fuji. And I spent quite a bit of time with my grandparents growing up. I grew up in the suburb of Tokyo where my parents bought their house. And as a child, I also spent some years in Moscow. At that time, it was Soviet Union, but before and after the collapse of Soviet. And I came to the lands of Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples in 2004 on a study permit issued by Canadian government without being aware of whose lands I just landed. And I did a short undergrad diploma program and then two graduate degrees at Simon Fraser University. And so I sort of ended up staying here since 2004. And I guess, you know, the question of what led me to the Indigenization Project, when I first came to Canada as an international student, I didn't know whether I would or could stay in this country. So unless you have resources, it's incredibly difficult actually to get permits to come and stay in Canada. I was fortunate enough to do so. But, you know, it was kind of later on when I realized about, you know, the fact that I was always being on the indigenous lands, I was embarrassed about not knowing that when I came here. I wanted my students to have different experience coming to Canada. And but, you know, this realization that I was on unceded territories of Indigenous peoples came because people around me sort of raised my awareness of Indigenous lands, Indigenous peoples, and Canada's settler colonialism and ongoing colonial issues. So I owe people like Dorothy Christian. She's a Shuswap and Siddich woman, and she was from my MA cohort at SFU. My MA and PhD supervisor, Kristen McAllister, who is a Japanese-Canadian scholar, she brought me to Women's Memorial March. And Dara Colhane, my PhD committee member, and my former research partner, Julia Aoki. So these people really kind of raised me as a person who is more aware and conscious of these issues. And so they taught me about indigeneity and coloniality of this place long before TRC report came out and land acknowledgement became more like a standard practice in Canadian university. So how to decolonize and indigenize my teaching has been one of the biggest concerns ever since I started teaching as a sessional instructor.
It's really powerful to hear about your story and how you came to your own understandings and also develop some of those questions. And I'm really curious, that learning journey sets us up for when we met and your decision to share this in your course, Introduction to Canada, to the UBC RITS students. So maybe you could share with us a little bit about your unique teaching and learning context, talk about the course, and also maybe share a little bit about the UBC RITS program.
Sure. So I teach in two programs, Asian Studies, but also in this exchange program called UBC Ritsumeikan Academic Exchange Program. And in short, we call it UBC RITS or RITS program. So the partnership between UBC and Ritsumeikan University began in 1991. And in recent years, UBC has received about 70 students each year. And most of these students study at UBC during the two winter terms, so for 8 months. I teach three arts courses for this program, and the majority of the Ritsumeikan cohort take my courses. And one of these courses is called Introduction to Canada, and it's offered in September. So in the past, you know, the indigeneity wasn't a big part of this course. But when I took over this course, I wanted to change this course quite a bit. I wanted to first increase quote-unquote indigenous content. It's tricky how to define indigenous content, but yeah, that was one of my goals. I wanted to change the framing of the course, so I'd be centering colonialism and indigeneity, and so it's not just, you know, some of the course topics to cover and then we move on to another topic, but rather indigeneity to be kind of the framework of this course. So when we talk about other issues such as multiculturalism, housing crisis, opioid crisis, these, you know, socioeconomic issues in Vancouver, for instance, we go back to the history of colonialism and try to understand these issues in relationship to, you know, the history and, you know, history of colonialism in Canada. I also wanted to include assignments that encourage students to reflect on their relationships with the Musqueam land. But I wasn't formally trained to do this. I'm new to these issues, and I'm still learning myself. I'm not an expert. So I rather see myself as a co-learner in this endeavor. So I sent an email, as I said. I sent an email to Amy Perro in CTLC's Indigenous Initiatives and sought consultation. And she then connected me to you, Janie, and you were working on Indigenization modules at the time. So yeah, you introduced me to this project, and I was like, wow, this is, you know, this is great. There's a group of people who are already working on this. And so the timing was just perfect.
Yeah, the timing was perfect for us too. And it's great hearing your story with us, because for us it was also someone very well primed to take this on. I'm really curious what some of the surprises or meaningful moments that occurred in your classroom from integrating in relation in your teaching. Because you talked about how you started and what your intentions were.
So let me tell you a little bit about the context of classroom and maybe a little bit about classroom climate.
Yes.
So, so in terms of student background, the students in this exchange program come from different disciplines. Many are studying international relations, but, you know, they can come from anywhere in terms of discipline. But typically and commonly, they know very little about Canada itself. And they know a little bit about Canada's multiculturalism. They usually think of it positively, and they're interested in learning more about it. And in my course, I normally try to complicate their understanding of multiculturalism too, because it sometimes makes racism invisible, but it also perpetuates settler colonialism. But yeah, so they know that Canada accepts many immigrants and refugees, but usually don't know much about Indigenous peoples and their lands. And so students see Canada primarily as an English-speaking country and one of the locations where they can learn how to speak English. And they want to learn English to make themselves more competitive in the job market back in their country. And of course, that's not the only reason they come, but it's an important reason. And their university wants their students to be competitive, right, in the global economy. So we have to understand this broader neoliberal context in which these students are embedded in. And for us too, we are part of this, you know, global economy, neoliberal global economy. So as an institution, we tend to see international students as economic subjects. They are an important source of money, simply put. So that's a kind of broader discussion. But in everyday teaching context, it can be extra hard to engage international students in the conversation of colonialism and you know, indigeneity, because they come from very different historical and geopolitical contexts. And it's extra challenging to do this with exchange students as opposed to regular international students who are here to do their full degree program, because exchange students are here only for sometimes a few months or maybe 1 year. So Introduction to Canada is the first course they take maybe 1 week or even a few days after their arrival. And Indigenization is great because it gives us a resource to start tackling this challenging task. We only have 1 hour lecture and then 3 hour breakout sections or tutorials. So I usually implement Indigenization modules in tutorials, which are run by TAs. And the two times that I taught this course are two very different experiences for me, not necessarily because there was COVID in between, but because we opened up the course to non-Tsimikan students. So that includes UBC students and other exchange students. And that happened in 2022. So in 2019, all my students are exchange students from this university. So the level of knowledge of indigeneity was evenly low. They started at the same level, but not only that, everybody was new to Canada, they were new to Canadian education system, they were new to English-speaking institution, the topics covered in the course, like just new to everything. So the question of what surprised students and how they responded. So in one of the invitation modules, there's an activity called Where Are You From? Yeah. So this is where, you know, we say, so the center of room is UBC, and that's north, that's south, west, and east. So you move around in the classroom to locate yourself in the direction of where you come from. And then they reflect on the place they, you know, they're born, the place they're raised. They further sort of move in the classroom to situate themselves in the places where their parents are from and their ancestors are from. So that's surprising, or that kind of activity is eye-opening for many students, because especially in Canada, they are just so accustomed to identify themselves merely as Japanese and see Japan as a, you know, one big place. But this activity really encourages students to think more specifically about, you know, the place they are from. Yeah, but this idea that they learn in this module that, you know, what is now known more as Canada actually includes territories of so many First Nations and Inuit and Métis gives a new perspective to their understanding of their homeland too. But they had a hard time to link this activity to land acknowledgement. So to them, the question of where they come from and the question of where we are situated right now seem to them two separate things. And it may have to do with the language. You know, they're still learning language. And when you're learning a new language, doing some conceptual work can be extra challenging. So in my understanding, right, understanding where they're from and the fact that everybody has their ancestral homeland helps them understand the importance of this land to the Musqueam, for instance, and also helps them understand that they are visitors. They come from elsewhere and visiting the Musqueam land as an exchange student. But, you know, connecting these two questions was a bit challenging, and it takes time for them to get it and needs extra supports. I guess it was new to them to be asked to connect their personal and family story to university course content. So this may be very common here or in some disciplines, but not so much elsewhere. So when they learn about colonialism, indigeneity in the university setting, many students tend to see them as an issue that are not related to their everyday life. So these are academic topics that become irrelevant once they leave the classroom. I mean, unfortunately, that's the generally how most students in Japan see university programs in general. But much of invitation modules ask students to reflect on their own stories, their relationships with the land here and their homelands, and also their responsibility as students studying at UBC in addressing settler colonial history and present. So I think they're going through a paradigm shift here. And this shift doesn't happen overnight. So invitation provides a starting point for this long process. And some students might get it quickly and others might need more time. And this process, of course, can go beyond their 8-month exchange program period.
Wow. Thank you so much. You've shared quite a bit there. And so much of it having to do with what you prepared and how you engaged with the materials and the students, also your TAs involved. It was very illustrative of how the modules look in the classroom, which I'm really appreciating. I think our listeners would also appreciate that, because it really brings the modules, which are on paper, here's an activity to do in your classroom, to life. I also very much appreciated and heard how the students were interacting with these materials and the specificities of their context and how much thought you put into that and how much you discovered about that by implementing the In Relation modules. So thank you. We've been speaking with Dr. Ayaka Yoshimitsu about facilitating In Relation in her Introduction to Canada course for the UBC Ritz-Mencken Exchange Program.
A few points that stood out in the first half of our interview.
Dr. Yoshimitsu begins by sharing about her background. She models engaging with positionality through reflexive teaching and learning practices. Her story also illustrates a continuous cycle of learning, sharing, and mentorship. She cites influential mentors and peers who, as she says, raised her and inspired her interest in supporting others learning about decolonization and indigenization. Next, Dr. Yoshimitsu discussed her goal to center Indigenous contexts in her course. To do this, she had to work through not being an expert in Indigenous studies, and she found support through In Relation's facilitation approach of co-learning. We learned about the complex contexts bringing the Ritsumeikan exchange students to Dr. Yoshimitsu's classroom and shaping their learning expectations. She describes applying In Relation modules in course tutorials to get students to reflect on their own histories and homelands in relation to the Indigenous lands where UBC is situated. While students sometimes struggled to connect where they came from to where they are now, Yoshimitsu describes this as a significant paradigm shift in their learning, which has the potential to continue beyond the learning in the course.
Stories in Relation is recorded and produced on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands and waters of the Musqueam people. We are grateful for the relationship built between UBC and Musqueam, and also acknowledge the support and teachings provided by Musqueam and the many public education resources that they have collaborated and developed.
Thanks for joining us for Stories in Relation, Episode 2, In Relation with Dr. Ayaka Yoshimitsu. Today we're interviewing Ayaka Yoshimitsu about integrating Facilitating In Relation in her UBC Ritsumeikan Exchange Program course, Canadian Studies 250. Ayaka, what did you do to adapt the In Relation resource for your classroom, and how did your students respond?
So because I know that most of my students in this course are staying in Canada for a short period of time, I want them to bring their learning back home with a new perspective to understand their own country, where they come from. So I added homework to the first module. So this was a new item to walk the talk and asking students to do some research about the history of colonialism and Indigenous peoples in their own country or a country or place where their ancestors come from. And they would bring their homework back. They share their findings with class in the following tutorial. And this was an eye-opening thing to many students because while they were actually aware of Indigenous peoples in Japan, such as Ainu and Ryukyuans or Okinawans, they did not think of them as Indigenous per se, but rather as ethnic minorities. So they hadn't really thought of Ainu and Ryukyuans as Indigenous peoples whose lands and cultures and languages and worldviews have been stolen by the Japanese and the United States, particularly the case of Ryukyuans in the post-Second World War period. They also tend to see colonialism as a thing of the past, especially in Japanese context. So Japan's colonialism, you know, supposedly ended in 1945 with the end of Second World War. So they don't really think about colonialism as an ongoing issue. The fact that Japan still occupies Ainu people's land and, you know, Ryukyuan's land. So that realization is really eye-opening to them. And in 2022, because there are students who are not from Japan but other places, they were able to see all these experiences of colonialism in relationship to one another instead of as isolated cases. So the, you know, in relation modules give students a new language to understand where they come from as well as where they are situated in Canada. I also created an assignment called your personal land acknowledgement. And so this is where students reflect on where they come from, what brought them to the Musqueam land, and how they benefit from being on this land. And I also use the intimidation modules as a scaffold to this assignment, but other activities happening in the classroom.
You mentioned previously that you face some challenges as well in working through, you know, bringing these into your course. And I was wondering if you could elaborate on that a little bit. What were some of the more challenging aspects of using the modules or working with this in your class?
Challenges can be great opportunities too, but there are challenges. I work with my TAs to deliver intimidation modules. And so many of my TAs are international students themselves. So sometimes they arrive in Canada for their graduate studies in August and start TA my course in September. So they too are co-learners, but they have much less time to prepare for facilitating the workshops, especially if they're new to Canada themselves. So usually we go over the content together prior to the workshops, and I come to the workshops to support them, to help them facilitate. But running these modules can be quite challenging to my TAs. And it's very interesting, though, how TAs, based on their own relationship to the history of colonialism and anti-colonial struggles in the region they come from, they link their knowledge back to the content of intimidation modules as they facilitate these activities. So they kind of already do what I want students to do in terms of creating the transnational linkages. So it's very interesting how intimidation modules can be an entry point for graduate student TAs to learn about colonial history in Canada and indigeneity in Canada. Another challenge and opportunity is the diversity within classroom. So some students come from a community that is directly affected by colonialism, and their ancestors or themselves have experienced colonialism in different ways. So in my classroom context, I've had students from South Korea or Taiwan. I also had Korean-Japanese students. And I think I also had an Ainu student, but they only implied their identity and did not fully disclose it. In any case, these Mekong students are more diverse than how they initially look. So how these students engage with indigenous content and discussion of colonialism differ from students who come from the dominant racial or ethnic group in Japan. And then again in 2022, I had also white students, students with mixed heritage and BIPOC students. So depending on who you are and how much embodied knowledge you have about colonialism and indigeneity, your engagement with the content is very different. Your response is different. So navigating discussion with such a diverse group of students can at times be difficult. And so in Japanese expression, we say temperature gap. So one corner of the classroom is hotter because the topic has a higher stake to some students. So they are more motivated, passionate, but also emotionally impacted by the topic. And other corners of the classroom can be cooler because some students feel distant from the topic, because they are perhaps more privileged and not, you know, negatively impacted too much by colonialism. So, and the difference exists in each of these groups, of course. So it's not just either hot or cool, but sometimes you don't notice the difference of the temperature until one student comes to you and tell me. So for example, Ayaka, I'm troubled by these students who are so distant and disengaged with the topic. You know, what we are discussing is my life. Mm-hmm. And they only see it as another academic topic. Mm-hmm. Well, Ayaka, I did this homework and did research about Japan's colonization of Korea and Taiwan, but I feel awkward about sharing it with Japanese students. Mm-hmm. I don't want to make them feel bad.
Yeah.
So sometimes I have to respond to the gaps with a time lag. Sometimes I cannot respond immediately. But my TAs and my students support me when I face this kind of challenges in the most immediate way. So they teach me things that I don't notice in the classroom. They draw my attention to important things happening in the classroom that require attention. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that your students and your TA supported you through some of these challenges. And I'm also hearing some things in just the story that you've shared about how you supported your students through these challenges. And I know it's kind of hard to talk about sometimes, talk about yourself, but I'm curious, can you help us make explicit a little bit some of your strategies when you encountered some of these challenging situations and you felt the need to step forward to support your students?
Yeah, I try to respond as soon as possible when students come to me. So in the case of, you know, the student who said, I feel very, very isolated because I'm the only person who is sort of invested in this topic. But she, you know, came talk to me with her Japanese friend. So I talked about allyship, for instance. Mm. You know, it's important for you to build alliance with other students who, you know, understand, try to understand your struggle. Because she wasn't isolated. She had friends. You know, she had capacity to build alliance herself. So I just drew, you know, her attention to what she had already been doing. For the other instance where students said, I feel awkward about sharing, you know, talking about history of colonialism in Asia to Japanese students. I don't want to feel, you know, make them feel bad. I said, it's okay. They need to learn. And I in that instance, I actually sort of proactively talked about Japan's colonialism, the importance of talking about this issue and the fact that it's still ongoing. It's not a thing of the past. So sometimes I step in to provide additional context for students. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. There's so much in there that you've shared with us, and that's partly why I wanted to ask that additional question. Because a lot of our listeners might be wondering, am I ready to introduce Indigenous content in my courses? What do you think equipped you to be ready to engage with In Relation?
So I never feel that I myself is ever ready or equipped enough to introduce or teach Indigenous content because I'm not, you know, an Indigenous person myself. And this actually isn't even my research area. So the question to me is not whether I'm ready or not, but whether I do it or not. And when you decide to do it, of course, then there's homework to do. And, you know, there's a different attitude and orientation you have to acquire, a different set of activities you become attuned to. So you might call it a prep. But it's an ongoing process of learning and unlearning because both colonialism and indigeneity are ongoing processes. They are not static things that you can capture and study. They're also lived and experienced differently by each community, each family, and individuals. So, you know, these are not something that you study and become an expert at. And students are also diverse. So even if you become effective in teaching such content to a particular group of students, you have to adjust your teaching according to the audience too. And my experience in, you know, 2019 and 2022 is already different, even when you use the same modules. And this year, for example, we are dealing with AI generation of students, mm-hmm. and ChatGPT can write a pretty decent land acknowledgement. So what do we do? But what I have done to prepare myself, so CTLT, Indigenous Initiatives, offer great workshops, classroom climate series. So I have been attending some of these and learning so much, and I meet other faculty members who are interested in introducing or teaching Indigenous content. And it's really great to get to know other people who are working on this. We can share ideas. We can talk about our struggles, something that worked in each situation. I also attend workshops and events organized by local neighborhood houses and other community organizations. So in my neighborhood, I live in East Vancouver, there's a Frog Hollow neighborhood house. And my daughter used to go to their after-school care, so I already knew about them, but I didn't know that they offered this kind of workshop. So this summer, they were offering a series of workshops called Connecting with Indigenous Peoples and Culture. And this was delivered by Angeline Day. She's a safe space, cultivating safe space facilitator. And I was able to attend just one of her workshops. And there was also a separate series of workshops organized in Clinton Park and to develop and take care of the medicine wheel garden. So that was more kind of, you know, hands-on workshops. And I created fences and ropes using natural materials from the local neighborhood. So these kind of, you know, locally organized workshops also really help you understand where you are situated and your relationship with the land. Also, on National Indigenous Peoples Day in June, there was an event happening in Grandview Park, and there's an Indigenous-owned bookstore called Iron Dog Book. And so, yeah, they're located on Hastings Street between Renfrew and Nanaimo. And they had its truck, bookstore truck, stationed along the Granby Park. So I went there and bought a couple of books written by Indigenous authors from BC or who are based, at least temporarily, in BC, or their stories are set in BC. I asked the staff, what would you recommend? And they came up with great recommendations. And this is where I learned about Eden Robinson and Jessica Jones. Of course, Weiwa Library is very resourceful. And I've been there to ask questions about Indigenous authors there too. And I tried to learn about and participate in local gatherings and activism too. So as I mentioned earlier, I was introduced to Women's Memorial March by my PhD supervisor, and I tried to attend that every year whenever possible. I, you know, went to Prisoner Justice Day event this summer, housing-related protests, so on and so forth. And I learned about these things from people around me, including my partner, my mentors, my friends inside and outside the academic community. So I cannot attribute my prep work to my individual effort alone.
Thank you so much for sharing all of that, Ayaka. We've covered a lot just now, and I think it's a good time to take a small pause. And when we come back, we'll wrap up the interview with Dr. Ayaka Yoshimizu with her thoughts on in relations impacts and some lessons learned. We're back in relation with Dr. Ayaka Yoshimizu. Ayaka, what did you find most impactful about in relation, and what lessons or advice would you pass on to instructors?
So some of the most impactful things about these modules is that it offers students, and particularly exchange students, a new language to make sense of the world in the most accessible way. So immediately it changes the way students perceive Canada, of course. But what may be even more impactful is how they their understanding of their own country and their identity change. So there are moments where students write in their reflection and say, oh, so what we call Hokkaido Prefecture today in Japan is actually unceded land of Ainu. But we never do land acknowledgement in Hokkaido. Why? There was another instance where I saw a student writing about potlatch ban in Canada and writing, I realized that this is exactly what happened to my ancestors in Japan. So again, the in-relation modules and other course content on colonialism and indigeneity not only inform students of new knowledge, but also shed a new light on what they had already known. Lesson for myself, but maybe for other people, embrace surprises and embrace opportunities for unlearning. I think the process of decolonization is very challenging and, you know, sometimes make you uncomfortable and unsettling. And I'm speaking as a settler instructor here. And as settlers, I think we need to unsettle ourselves or, you know, by decentering power. And in a classroom setting, it may mean that you open yourself up to unexpected situations and questions and you become a co-learner. But it's also important to use your power to navigate discussion in an accountable way. So, yeah, I've encountered some difficult situations in the classroom discussion, and you're responsible as an instructor to deal with these issues and navigate the discussion in a better way. So these are all lessons for me. I also want to say that you can't do this work individually. And maybe that's a good thing, because I have been able to get connected with so many people through this work, including you and other instructors and students and TAs. And I find these connections are so empowering.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm very stuck as well, or struck, I would say, by the sense of community that you've evoked for us in sharing these stories. In listening to your experiences implementing In Relation in your classroom, what I'm hearing about is the voices of your students, you know, filling this interview. Thank you to your students for, you know, for having those experiences, and thank you for sharing about some of those experiences with our listeners. Also your TAs and how it's impacted them. So I'm really seeing, like, you know, it's like a dropping a pebble into a lake, and you see these concentric ripples. And so I really appreciated hearing all of that.
Yeah, so I'd like to keep in touch and continue to learn and exchange ideas.
Well, thank you. I think we're in agreement there. Definitely want to stay in touch. And thanks again to our listeners for spending time with us today. Dr. Ayaka Yoshimitsu, we so appreciate you for sharing your stories and your journey, and hope to see you again soon. I think we will, actually. We've got some plans coming up.
This has been Stories in Relation, Episode 2, In Relation with Dr. Ayaka Yoshimitsu. In the second half of this episode, we learned about some of the challenges and opportunities that came in implementing In Relation, and Dr. Yoshimitsu shared her advice for instructors for how to support student learning. As we were wrapping up the interview, I especially appreciated Dr. Yoshimitsu's reframing the idea of being ready to something more like attuning yourself to the continuous learning and unlearning needed to responsibly engage with Indigenous topics in your teaching. Listeners may find Dr. Yoshimitsu's reflections on the types of activities and resources that most supported her learning journey helpful. So many of her suggestions share a common theme of finding community and learning in place. This episode concludes our inaugural season of Stories in Relation. If I can take a moment to speak for Sam and myself, we've learned so much putting this together, and we're looking forward to bringing you more soon. Don't forget to take a look at our show notes, which include key takeaways from this episode and links to some of the ideas and resources we've referred to, as well as post-listening reflection questions for this episode. I'm Janie Liu, your co-host with Sam Nock of the Stories in Relation podcast. You can find us at inrelation.ubc.ca. Just click the podcast tab at the top navigation bar and scroll down to check out the episodes organized by season. We are working on season 2, which will be released in 2025. Including a deep dive into the research that informed the In Relation modules and facilitation guide, an interview with the developers of the UBC What I Learned in Class Today Renewed project, and more. As Dr. Yoshimitsu says, you can't do this work individually. So we really hope you will join our listening community by subscribing to our newsletter to stay updated when new episodes drop, and to share your own stories as well. Thanks again to the CTLT Indigenous Initiatives team at UBC and to Cedar Space in the Faculty of Arts for your support. We appreciate everyone who's listening to today's episode, and we hope you'll continue listening and keep in touch. We look forward to building community with you.